That doesn't mean that every soul in a family is of equal bearing, because God placed the dad responsible for the family and all of that, but the dad has to follow the rules, okay, that he's going to place, and he is under God's rule as well. So let every soul be subject to the authorities. Going through Romans 13 here. What's the next observation we can make? All authorities are from God. Notice here it says, there is no authority except from God. And to me, this makes it clear that God is in control of things. That means that there's no parent that has not been specifically placed over their children. God intended that to be. We taught that on Wednesday nights, the 10 unchangeables. I'm not going to sing it for you right now, but the verse said, I'm one of a kind. I'm unique. I can't change myself. God designed me the way I am. I'm not 6'8". You know, I'm not athletic or whatever the case might be. God made me the way I am. And number two, my mom and dad, those are sovereign choices that God made. He placed me under my parents, for example. So there's no authority except from God. And that's a key phrase throughout all of this. All authority is from God, right? There's no authority. So every authority has been placed there. That means that God is ultimately in control. And that's why Jesus can say to Pilate, who was a loser, you wouldn't be here unless God put you here. That didn't make him any less of a loser. But he still had the authority that God gave him from that position. That's true of families. That's true of husbands. That's true of moms and dads. That's true of government leaders, even pastors. Okay, all of that. There's no authority except from God. What's another one here? What's another observation?
All the individuals that are in authority are placed by God.
Yeah, place. Give me the word that's there. Yeah. All existing authorities, it says it a different way, are appointed by God. Isn't that amazing? Does that change your perspective of your authorities? Huh? Does it? If you understand that your authority is appointed over you by God, how does that change your view of, say, your boss at work, if you work outside? How does that change your view of your mom and dad? How does that change your view of your husband? Even your pastor? I know that sounds self-serving, but it's true. Okay? All existing authorities are appointed by God. Okay? God placed those specific people in that specific position at this specific time. There's no authority except from God, and all authorities are appointed by God. That changes things, doesn't it? Even if you didn't vote for him? I didn't vote for the current president of the United States. But I believe he's there because God allowed him to be there on purpose for God's reasons. Remind me again, who was Caesar when Paul wrote this? Putting it in red here, Nero. Nero, to be kind, was not kind, and he was a nutcase. He was a fruitcake. He was a murderous leader. Remember that as we go through here. God allowed him to be in charge even then. And Paul's writing saying, every soul be subject to the authorities. Why? Because God's in control and He knows what He's doing. But they're being unfair. Didn't Nero burn Rome and blame it on the Christians? That's at least tradition, what it says. Wasn't Nero the one they said that it was safer to be his dog than his wife? He went and killed so many family members. And yet, there's something there that God says He's there for a reason. That doesn't mean God condones what He does. That doesn't mean that God approves of everything that happens. But there's still a leadership assignment, an appointment there that God is accomplishing His bigger work through than just for you, yourself, or me, myself. God is accomplishing what He's intending to accomplish through President Barack Hussein Obama outside the realm that I can understand or fathom and that God has cared to explain to me. And that is true at every level of authority. Okay? God places somebody over me at work or government, parents, or whatever. Just because I don't understand what God is doing doesn't mean that God isn't doing it. All right? Very big. Very big thing. So, folks, when we start looking at qualifications, and there's qualifications for leadership, understand that. But understand, when we're in a situation that's not within our realm of responsibility or control, that guess what? God still claims that. And I believe, too, based upon this, what is our response? What is our response? Again, look back to Jesus. What did He do when He was being treated unfairly? And the Bible says He is there for our example, not just some historical event. What did He do? He accepted it. Okay, He responded, but I'm looking for something specific. He was a sheep. He didn't respond. But He committed, the Bible says He committed Himself to Him and judged right. It isn't just being quiet for quiet's sake. It's being quiet because you're acknowledging the fact that God is in control. Understand that. Your quietness is not an end in of itself. Your quietness is an acknowledgement that God is bigger and He's in control of the situation over your imperfect, sinful authorities. You have to accept that. That's what Jesus did. That was His very example. That you yield to that authority, even if it's unfair to you, because God is bigger and knows what He's doing. And He's in charge of all of those authorities. So that's what we do. Is there a place to appeal? I believe we can appeal at times. But at times it's better. Jesus didn't appeal to Pilate. Isn't it interesting? Jesus did not appeal to Pilate. Hey, please let me go. I'm innocent. Okay? That doesn't necessarily make it wrong. But understand, the Bible seems to lean more on the quiet side. Answer questions if you're asked. We seem to be the other way around, you know. Scream for our rights, you're being unfair. And it's like, who promised you fairness? Right? In life. Who promised you fairness? They're selling you a bill of goods. If God never said that what you will receive will be fair. Because God's accomplishing something different. In fact, if you receive something unfair, harsh treatment for doing good, and you receive it patiently, the Bible says that's good and commendable before God. Okay? God's accomplishing bigger things through you than your own comfortable happiness. All right? Now, number two, verse two here. What else goes on? Because this builds. This builds. Okay, every soul is to be subject to authorities. Why? There's no authority except from God. And all authorities that exist are appointed by God. So there's a logical conclusion here, okay? What do you got going there, bud? What do you have there? Oh, sorry. I thought you were texting or something. Sorry. I'm very ugly, so it bothers me when people don't look at me. It actually doesn't bother me if people don't. Sorry, Josh. My apologies. Yeah, whoever what? What's the word? Because it's repeated a couple times in this verse. Whoever. I'm going to capitalize. Resists. Okay, what's it say? Resist what? What does that mean? What does that mean? Okay, I'll buy that. What does it mean to resisting authority? What is ordinance? Yeah, resist the law of God. You're resisting something that God has set up. So if we fight against authorities, whether it's our parents, our husbands, our bosses, our government, the leaders, our pastors, and I'm using this, we haven't got to the church part yet, so we haven't talked about it. If we fight against those authorities, we are resisting what God has set in place. So when we resist the authority that God appoints, we are resisting God Himself ultimately. We're going against what God has designed to happen. Okay? And notice the resist. What does the word resist conjure up? What does the word resist conjure up? Yeah, it could be fighting. I mean, it doesn't really describe it, but resist. I think a resist is like a burrow or something. You know, I thought a donkey. You're trying to go this way, and you're trying to prevent that from happening. Now, is it possible to resist authority? This is assuming that you can. Does that help or hurt? Because we're already talking about it. God doesn't expect things to be fair, and God has placed them over you on purpose. Okay, so it's not an issue of whether or not you agree or not. That's the whole idea of following authority, because they're your authority. You follow not because you agree, but because God said to. Okay, submitting assumes that you disagree, and if you were in charge, you would do it differently. But you're going against it. You're trying to keep that from happening. You're not following that leadership. Now, what's it go on to say there? Those who what? There's that word again. Resist. Bring judgment upon themselves. Circle the word resist again. What happens? What happens when we resist authority that God placed over us, even though they're imperfect, sinful authorities? Yeah, stuff happens to us. Well, they're unfair. God says, no, you yield to authority, right? You yield to authority. Because you're saying, God, you don't know what you're doing. You're not really running the place, so I'm going to have to. Right? You end up bringing judgment upon yourself. Oops, I forgot judgment, didn't I? How does that happen? In what ways does that show up? Yeah. Break it. I'm not gonna follow the rules. So you end up getting a speeding ticket. I have a good friend. I'm kind of out of contact with him now. It's been several years. But I knew him in the Army. He was a scout. And a believer, a dear brother, very intelligent, extremely intelligent man. And we haven't written for a couple of years, but we've stayed in kind of casual contact ever since then. But he was kicked out of the Army because he failed consistently to make it on time. He was the top scout, they would go out ahead of our unit and scout out the area. I can't remember. There was more to it than that. Well, it's more than appointment, but it was a whole group, and they were kind of the elite group within our infantry battalion. But he was always the one that scored the highest, and he was literally ingenious. He was just a guy that just did all kinds of neat things. But he ended up getting let go out of the Army because he couldn't make it on time. I mean, making a time is yielding to authority. They tell you when to be there in the military, and you have to be there. Okay, or getting fired because you're not on time at work or whatever. I'm talking to Lynn. Lynn's about the most reliable. I could set my clock by Lynn, but that's what can happen. Okay, and whose fault was that? Wasn't the Army's fault? You get in trouble because you do something wrong, you're resisting authority, even though the authorities are unfair and they're imperfect and sinful, you're going to get in trouble for it. And whose fault is it? Your own fault at that point, okay? When you resist, the authority does something to try and bring you back to center. That's not wrong. That's the purpose of authority, even though they might be unfair. Okay? God says you're supposed to yield to that authority. Unless God says something else and you still yield to authority. You just disobey and then take the consequences. So there's kind of like a built-in law of cause and effect here. So there's the authority there, and I believe ultimately God deals with people that don't yield to authority. Okay? It ultimately is good for us to yield to authority because it makes it easier all the way around. Okay, both for the authorities and those that follow. Now notice, let's just look at verses 3 through 7 briefly. These are the two key verses here. But notice here, for rulers, we're talking about government rulers, are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Ultimately, rulers, even as wicked as they are, there's an enforcement of law there. Do you want to be unafraid of the authority? Do what is good and you will have praise from the same. By and large, you obey the laws, you will get approval even from a wicked ruler. Okay? Notice verse 4 now. For he is God's minister. You might want to write the word deacon above that. He's God's servant. Helper, maybe. For good. Even the worst of leaders brings something to the table. He, this one happens to be Nero, is God's minister for you for good. But if you do evil, be afraid. For he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is God's minister, deacon, avenger to execute wrath on him who practices evil. What's the purpose of government? To retain order. Not to provide. I believe that it's absolutely wrong for the government to be providing for people. It's condoned thievery, really. The whole food stamp thing, the medical stuff, I'm not for a government health plan. I believe the government would take their hand out of things that weren't their business. Things would work better. And let people help that then. Okay? help make things more efficient. The government does not do well what it does not intend, God never intended for it to do, whether it's the postal system, the education system, health system, or even now the financial realm that's been kind of taken over by the government in recent days. It will not do well at that. They're there to avenge wrath, and him who practices evil. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. Let's stop there for a minute. I told you last week I was going to talk about Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being a great guy, 1 being an awful ruler, where would you rate him? Probably about a 1. He knowingly poisoned like 300,000 Turks, we know, amongst other things. There was a lot of torture. If you were against his regime, you would disappear, and they would torture you and kill you, and then if your family would want you back, your body back, they would make you pay for the bullets that killed you. Things like that. He was not a good man. What happened, however, when Saddam Hussein's regime was toppled and he was taken out? What happened in Iraq for a period of time? It was chaos. There was murder. There was the toughest guy wins scenario. The one with the most guns ran the show. So even with Saddam Hussein's wickedness and his debauchery and all of that, there was still something there that was good. It maintained an order, and people were fearful of going against that order. And that ultimately, to that limited extent, was good for people because it turned into chaos, I think, for about 2 years. And every lord, self-appointed lord or whatever, had their own army that was doing their own things and making their own rules and having their own government at that point. So again, understand that their God had a ruler there, and I'm not arguing good or bad for overthrowing him, but I don't think the United States was ready for that. Okay, they didn't have an infrastructure there to take the place of that, and in fact, it was such a stark authority that the reaction to it was even there. It was whatever you could get away with was what was allowed in Iraq. And so when you lost that strong hand, you also lost law and order for a period of time. That doesn't mean Saddam Hussein was a good man, but law and order was still good to the extent that it was good. Okay, that didn't mean that it was good to torture people or whatever, but there was still a suppression of evil, even in that regime, that it was limited to a large degree. People were still persecuted. Believers, it was a terrible place to be. It is, still is now for believers in Iraq because Muslims persecute believers there. But understand that there was still a infrastructure of punishment that kept people from doing wrong in some kind of open way. And I believe that God had Saddam Hussein there. The Bible says he appointed all authorities. That doesn't make him good authorities. But he had him there for his reasons for that time, and he was still accomplishing, he was still God's servant to protect people to some degree or another during that time. God uses, throughout the history of the Bible, one nation to dominate another out of punishment. So it appears that God used the United States of America to call Saddam Hussein into account in God's time. Okay, Saddam's family was, at least to a large degree, was wiped out and all of that, and no one felt bad for it for the most part because of that, what went on there. Verse 6, I'll read 5 again. Therefore, you must be subject not only because of wrath, and are you talking about the wrath of the authority or wrath of God? And probably the answer would be yes. You bring judgment on yourself from the authority, but also from God. But also for conscience sake, because you're a believer, you yield to your authority, not necessarily because it's fair, but you understand that God is in charge. Verse 6, for because of this you also what? Pay taxes, for they are God's ministers. He says that now for the third time. Verse 4, he talks about it, God's minister, and verse 6 now, God's minister, attending continually to this very thing. What? To execute wrath on those who do evil. To punish those, to, if you will, to keep people from being bad. If there's no one to punish evil, then evil will abound. And notice verse 7, render therefore all to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due. What's a custom? That's probably what we think of custom now. I don't think that's what it's talking about here, but that's exactly how we use it now. We pay customs, which is kind of an import tax. What would be custom to... you honor somebody in a certain way because of who they are. For example, a judge walks into a room. What is the normal custom? Everybody stands up. What if you don't like the judge? You stand up anyway. Why? Because he is placed there by God for God's purposes, and God is in charge. Okay, so that gives you an idea. We probably don't have as many customs, but still you would defer to someone that was in authority over you, not because they are better than you, but because they hold a position of authority over you. In the army, if they were over you, if they were an officer, we were required the custom, and by the way, that is a military term as well, the custom was to salute them. You would always initiate the salute. In fact, we always had the, I can't even remember what it was. First to fight was what we had to say. I don't know what the officers said back. But it was the custom, military custom, to salute first. And then they, by military custom, were required to salute you back. That wasn't their choice either. You were acknowledging their position and your position, and they the same. They were acknowledging their responsibility to be in charge of you. That was a custom. Or if a general drove by, there was a certain level of leader that they would mark the vehicle. If it wasn't just generals. You saluted the vehicle, and they would return again. But it was an acknowledgement of the structure. And they got saluted because of what was on their collar, not because of what their name tag said. Yep, they would put flags, at least in the Army. I said the Marines or something different. Yeah, we always had a red flag with a star on it that was a... Yep. So then you would, it kind of give you a heads up for that. But again, they got saluted because of what was on their collar, not what their name tag was. Okay? And that was the custom. And again, that was their due because of their rank. What if you didn't like them? Didn't make a bit of difference. Okay? And there was even ways to address people if they weren't officers. You didn't call your platoon sergeant by your last name. It was always Sergeant so-and-so, or, that was the way you acknowledged them. Now, your peers, you could call each other by last name, but not your platoon sergeant or whatever. Okay, and it was always sir for the officers. Yeah, if you didn't salute, they could actually charge you with insubordination, and you could suffer all kinds of things.
Or worse, they make you stand up with every guard.
Marines are special people. They get their point across. Let's put it that way. Okay, so customs. That seems to be what the custom is. Do you bow to the king or whatever? That's the appropriate custom. That's what is their due, okay? Fear to whom fear, and again, these are probably general terms, but you follow what they say, fear. You follow what they say, and honor to whom honor. And again, maybe those are harder to differentiate, but the whole idea is, even at, I mentioned like in families, Western culture has largely lost the responsibility that people have to older people. Annie, in the Philippines, I maybe have already asked you this, but is there still an honor there for the someone who walks in that's older, they would stand up, even if they don't know who they are or what? I mean, in Western culture, it's me, myself, and I are the three most important people that I know, and nobody else matters. But in most other cultures, they still have an acknowledgement, except for Western culture, they still have an acknowledgement for older age people. There's an honor due them just simply because of their age. And that carries over into parents. There's an honor there for parents because they're assumed to be, yes, authority, but also wiser because of their age. And therefore, there's an inherent authority in them just because of their age. And the Bible seems to bring that up, that people don't stand up when older people come in. There's a general rebellion that exists. Okay? So even then, I would encourage you to recognize people that are older than you and just, you know, it's like giving a woman your chair if you're a man kind of thing. It's that kind of thing. And when they're older, let them have the chair. If there's only one chair, you stand up and let them sit there. That's part of that honor and respect idea. And that's built into what the Bible says. Down south, everything was yes, sir, and no, sir, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am. That's just the way you talk. Okay? That's the way they expected to talk. Yes. There's just a general courtesy about it. And it was always Miss Whoever. You could have been married for 60 years, but you're still Miss Juanita. Because it was a courtesy in that way. Everyone's, the women are Miss. Even the youngest ladies were called Miss so-and-so because it was a courtesy kind of idea. And then in church, they always called the boys brothers. So Brother Subra. Brother Subra. You want Coca-Cola? Sure. Grape, okay. That's another whole story. I'm like, grape, Coca-Cola. So there's several commands here. Let every soul be subject. You might want to circle that in verse 1. And then verse 5, I'll have to look and see, but it says be subject there. And then verse 7, render is a command. It's, folks, as believers, we have responsibilities that God lays down. We do not choose, by and large, who our authorities are. We get a vote. Excuse me, but that doesn't sway a whole lot of people. A lot of people voting make a difference, but one person, I vote. And I have had my say, and then I yield to what the result is. Okay? I didn't choose my parents. They really didn't choose me, honestly. You know, they got what they were given kind of thing. By the way, Kevin means handsome. How's that for a misnomer? Ted, I didn't mean to put you into some cardiac arrest. But we don't choose our lead. But God expects, demands, yes, commands us to yield to them because that is what he has said we are to do. And he is in charge. It's not like people ultimately do what they want. Everyone will give an account of their leadership level before the Lord. The Bible is clear on that. And we are responsible to yield to them. So, any questions or comments? We will cover and finish the next two passages next week, Titus chapter 3 and 1 Peter 2. A lot of this, again, has to do with because you are believers, this is how you conduct yourselves in this world. So. All right. Lynn, you want to close us in prayer today, please?